The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Gentlemen, apologies for the delay. The Maggid chair is finally in, but we're starting now, so please stay with us for a minute. Thank you.
And the full screen. What's the
door? Okay. I can
do. Okay, everybody, this is God's Day to Turn Away. Northwest London, Lamed Sivan, Sivan Tafshi and Pei, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, Monday, 22nd of June, Rabbi Shimon Heller, Hishtablus versus Bitochen is our subject. We discussed last week, which is really a bit of a sequel shiur, although it's a shiur that stands on its own feet. We discussed last shiur about Hashem, how he works. Hashem gives us bracha ad v'libai. There is no gvul to the bracha that Hashem gives us. The reason why we are limited in the bracha that we get, it depends on the size of the kli of the vessel that we create to accept that bracha. Hashem's bracha is ad v'libai, but as much as our level of bitachon is, as much as we...
We don't hear you.
You don't hear me? That's very strange. Can you hear me now? Is it any better? Turn away. Why am I muted? Can you hear me now? Yeah? Can you hear me? Kedar? You told me he doesn't hear me. Can you phone him back and see if he can hear me now? So, once again, okay, in that case, this is Northwest London, Lamed Sivan, Tafshi and Pei. Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, Monday, 22nd of June, Hishtadlus versus Hatzlacha Rabbi Shimon Heller. We discussed that the way Hashem gives us bracha depends on the kelim that we prepare for Hashem. Depending on the size of the kelim that we prepare for Hashem will depend on the amount of bracha that we get. That is what we saw last year, and I want to continue on that subject today. Yaakov Avinu leaves the house of his father Yitzchak, and he's got to marry a wife from the daughters of Lavan. Yaakov Avinu leaves Yitzchak's house, and he's got to take himself a wife from the daughters of Lavan. Now, if we know anything about Lavan, don't go near that person if you don't have a lot of money. Don't go near him even if you do have a lot of money. Even Eliezer of Davron, with the fortunes of money that he traveled with, which tried a number of times, there was attempted murder to destroy him, but that's with money. If you don't have money, don't go near him, because all the interest, this swindler and this terrible person, once again, is money. And so, Yaakov Avinu leaves his father's house. His father knows what Lavan is. He knows what it means to find a wife from the daughters of Lavan. He gives them a lot of money, presents, wealth, and with that, Yaakov leaves his father's house. However, on the way, he's intercepted by Eliphaz. Eliphaz will steal everything he has until he has absolutely nothing. He steals everything, including his clothes. Yaakov Avinu jumps into a river, he has nothing. At that point, he has zero chance of succeeding in his mission. Again, he has no clothes, he can't take the next step forward, he's going nowhere, he's got no opportunities, no possibilities, he's stuck. There he is wondering, where am I going to go next? What am I going to do? The last thing I'm going to get is a daughter of Lavan as a wife. How is this going to work? He turns around and he says the following pasuk, Shira Malis, Esa Einayla Hori Me'ayin Yavoi Ezri. I look to the mountains. Where will my salvation come from? I am Yavoi Ezri. Then he's mechazik himself and he says, Ezri me'im Hashem oisei shamayim b'aret. No, I've got nothing to fear. I have no doubt Hashem will give me a salvation. I may be in the most abysmal, impossible situation. Hashem is there. He'll give you my salvation. So once again, he is ruined. He has no money. He has no clothes. He's inside the river. He can't take the next step forward. I am Yavoi Ezri. No, Ezri me'im Hashem. I know that Hashem is going to give me my salvation. Now, many years ago, I was in Gate of Yeshiva Ketana. I was there for about 10 days. And I remember the Mashgiach spoke. I don't remember who it was, but I do remember the Mashgiach spoke. And he asked the following question. When Yaakov Avinu asked, Ezri Me'im Hashem, what was he thinking? When he asked me, I am Yavai Ezri, what was he thinking? Did he not know that Ezri Me'im Hashem? Did he have a hover minute that he didn't realize Hashem would help him? Could Yaakov Avinu have passed the stage of question, where will my salvation come from? so that he needed to remind himself, Ezri Me'im Hashem? Wouldn't we expect that Yaakov to stand and say, Shiram Alek, Ezri Me'im Hashem? What was the question? To which he explains as follows. Yaakov never had a question. He always knew Hashem would help him. But when he was in the river, he said, I know Hashem's going to help me, but how? How would Hashem help me? How is this going to happen? How would Hashem send this miracle? Would I win the national lottery? Would I find a treasure in the ground? Would I meet some? What? It's starting to think of how is Hashem going to help him? Thinking of ideas for Hashem so to speak, how to bring in the salvation. And then he said, stop, 1 minute. I need to give Hashem ideas how to help me. I need to give Hashem Kavyachal answers how to help me. Ezri Me'im Hashem, and my salvation will come from Hashem netto without me having to, so to speak, help Hashem and give them ideas. When we give Hashem, so to speak, ideas, we are limiting the bracha because Hashem is unlimited. When we put our minds into the source of our bracha, we've limited our bitach, we've limited our bracha. So Yaakov says, even that, even though I know it comes from Hashem, even to think how would Hashem do it, is limiting. Ezri Me'im Hashem. Oh, you say Shemayim about it. I met a friend of mine, a younger man who teaches in seminaries, a typical younger man who lives, as you say in Hebrew, Miyad Lepeh, from his hand to his mouth, literally gets through the week. I was talking to him, and he'd married off 3 children. And he told me that he calculated that it has cost him so far $1 million to marry off his 3 children. And I said, where in the world could you get $1 million from? It should be loans. Where do you get $1 million from? And he said, I want to tell you a story. I actually read the story in shortly after in a little satir paper and shul. But there was a Rosh Hashiva who had married off his entire family, which is a miracle, specifically in Israel, where there's very high demands to marry off your daughters. It's a miracle. There was a Rosh Hashiva who married off his whole family. There was a young Rosh Hashiva who was just going into the parasha. He was like up to his first child. So the young Rosh Hashiva went to the older Rosh Hashiva and he said, how in the world did you do it? How did you marry up all the children? Do you have millions in your bank, but I don't know. How did you do it? I know you don't have. How did you do it? To which the Rosh Hashiva said, the older one, it was Siyata Dishmaya. And the younger one said, that's obvious. But how? What? Just tell me, how was Siyata Dishmaya chal? Did you get a specific loan? What? How was it chal? The older Rosh Hashiva said, I'm not telling you. Please tell me, I'm not telling you. Just tell me, I'm not telling you. Why are you not? I'll tell you why I'm not telling you. If I tell you how I married off my children and you'll hear my miracles, your brain will automatically lock into my miracles. And you'll say, oh, if I have the same thing and if this will happen to me as well, the second you've done that, you've destroyed yourself. Hashem has his own plans for you and his own plans for me. And you have your own siyata dishmaya. But if your brain closes you to my channels, you've lost your channels, and then you're in trouble. Don't do that. Do your ishtadlis, your maximum ishtadlis, and then leave it to Hashem. But don't work your brain down my path, because it will only do you damage. Leave it to Hashem. He has greater ideas. Rabbi Yanky Galinsky says an incredible verse, incredible. It's almost the first one of the Gemara. Rabbi Yanky Galinsky brings it out. The Gemara Seif Masechet Tainus brings down that Tu B'Av was a day when the girls would go down to the vineyard, the mechilos, in circles. And that was the day of the Shidduchim. Any unmarried men, Ekol Bachurim Ravakim, says the Gemara, unmarried men, would then go down to the vineyards as well. So all the girls would gather in the vineyard, and then the Bachurim would come, and that was where the Shidduchim were made, and that's where they would take their wives. Now, every girl wants to marry, and she's got a mitzvah to do her maximum to try and attract a husband to herself. So every girl would trumpet whatever her milo was, says the Gemara. Your voice, my voice. What did attractive girls say? So they come to the vineyard and the boys are coming and they would say, Tunu Eimechem LeYosi, turn your eyes to Yosi. Ki Ein Isha Ela LeYosi, because that's what you marry for. That's what it is in the Isha, Isha Yafa. Marry me for my Yosi, that's what I've got to give you. The Miyuchasais, what did they say? Marry me because I got yichus, and therefore yichus will pass through to your children. Marry me. The Gemara doesn't say the next stage, but I imagine the rich girls would say, marry me, and I'll give you another, and then you'll get a full life support. It says the Gemara, what does the girl say? You've got nothing to offer. The girl is not attracted, hasn't got yichus, and no money. What does she say? How is she going to get a husband? What does the Mechu'ara say? It says the Gemara. The Mechu'ara says, marry me l'shem shomayim, or the vad shetatzruni bazohovim, but on condition that you bedeck me in jewels. You make me your queen. You give me jewels and diamonds on that condition. So the Ivanka Galinsky, it's very strange. The first girl has got what to sell. She's got Yoisi. Oh, I've got Yoisi, marry me. If she doesn't make demand, she's happy to get a husband. Second girl's got Yichus. She comes, trumpets to Maida. I've got Yichus, marry me. And she's happy to take her. She's not making demands. The third girl, the Gemara doesn't say, but she's got money. So she's put forward her money. And that's what she's giving to get a husband. This girl has got nothing to offer. Nothing. Can you lick her to shame Shemayim and marry me to shame Shemayim? But on condition that you turn me into a queen and you spy on me and you give me diamonds and jewelry, she's making demands. She's got nothing to offer. So, Zhugansky Galinsky, I'll explain you what's going on here. The first girl has got a mahalach, a derech hateva, how she's going to marry. I have yotzi, and through my yotzi, she said, I'm going to get married. The second, I've got yichot, and through my yichot, I'm going to marry. So, they have a mahalach. They are using derech hateva, a sinoi, a mahalach, to get the husband. If so, don't exaggerate. As much as your mahalach and your sinoi, the derech hateva gives you, that's all you can ask for. But the girl has got nothing. She's not coming with Derech HaTeva. She's going straight to Hashem. Hashem, help me. Hashem, marry me off. Hashem, I've got nothing. There's no way up to Derech HaTeva I can marry. I'm turning straight to you, Hashem. The second you go straight to Hashem, you get everything. So Hashem's not limited. If you limit yourself and say, through this, I'm going to get my parnasa. Through my chasnol, I'm going to get my parnasa. So you get corona, no more chasnol, no more parnasa. But if you say, through Hashem, I get my parnasa, then comes corona, no more chasnol, Hashem still gives you your parnasa. Because you went directly to Hashem, because you'd be talking with that stage prior. Memela, the girl who has nothing is better off in a way. The girl who's got yoke, you can also go straight to Hashem, but generally she'll be pulled to her derech hateva, to her tinoi, and rely on that. If she relies on a teva tinoi, she is now restricted to a tinoi. Not to speak, the girl who comes to Shem Shemayim, she can get much more, she goes directly to Hashem. They say the moshel of the little street urchin, little street kid, never, he's like torn clothes, poor, never, barely gets a piece, you know, begs for money in the street and barely gets a piece of bread. One day he's standing in the marketplace and he sees this vendor with a table full of sweets and candies, and like he's standing there, mouth is watering, his eyes are popping out of his sockets, like, I wish I could have that. And the vendor sees this little kid, he says, come, my child, take a handful of candy. The kid doesn't move. Come, my child, I allow you to take a handful of candy. The kid doesn't move. Come, I let you have a handful of candy, of sweet. The kid doesn't move. So come, open your hand. The kid opens his hand, and the vendor fills his hand with sweet and pours it into the little kid's two hands. The kid runs away so excited, and he shares it with his friend. And his friend said, look, the guy offered you three times. Why didn't you take? And the kid said, all that I want to take. But I've got a tiny little hand. And I knew if I'll take with my hand, I'm going to get three little sweets. But if he gives me with his hand, then I'm going to get three times the amount that I wanted him to give me. The same way it works for Hashem. If we take from Hashem, we're limiting ourselves. If we just switch off and leave it to Hashem, obviously after Ishtar, we'll see that in a minute if we have time. But if we switch off and we leave it to Hashem, then we'll get more than we ever imagined. Because then it comes from Hashem's hand. I'll give you an example. I'll do this because it's a very short of time. But I read a story of people who are Moshe Nefesh for Hashem, lost money, Yishem Shemayim, and Hashem always pays back. So, with Pesach Kron's got a story of a guy called Jacobo, who lived in Mexico, who had just been Chayzer B'Tshuva, made a massive investment, bought a massive property, desperately had to sell it within a certain amount of time. He refurbished it, set it up, he wanted to sell it, but since he took such a major mortgage and borrowed so much money, if he doesn't sell it within a certain period of time, then he's going to be in serious trouble. Well, he bought the property and he set it up and he refurbished it, and then he wasn't selling it. It just wasn't selling. And Jacob was getting into complete panic. But he just started to be close to the children. He was keeping Shabbos. And the story goes that a couple came from Bath, of course, non-Jewish people. And they were very interested in this building and they were looking into it. Obviously, it takes a long time to build a building. You send surveyors and to make sure it's safe, et cetera, et cetera. And for a whole week, they're looking down this building to see if they want to buy it or not. It was Friday afternoon. They're just finishing up the paperwork. But Jacobo realizes that soon it's going to be Shabbos. So he said, look, it's going to be Shabbos, and I started to keep the Sabbath. I'm going to go to the synagogue tonight, so maybe we can just like finish this off quickly before the sunset. And they said, no, we're buying a building. We're not rushing this. So don't put us under pressure. We're doing this at our own pace. So Jacobo says, fine, so let's wait till Sunday. They said, no, we're flying back on Saturday. So Jacobo said, if so, then I close the deal. I can't work on Sabbath. he lost the deal. He went to shul, but he felt very bad about it, and he wasn't sure if he did the right thing. To forget, he's only been a Chal Shabbos so many times, like one more Chilul Shabbos. So in the next few weeks, he was like eating himself up. Should I have? Shouldn't I have? But he was Moisa Nefesh for Hashem. He said, look, Hashem, I was Moisa Nefesh for you. I'm sure you're going to pay me back. And that's what happened, because, again, very big story. The story, there was a major earthquake in Mexico. Over 15,000 people were injured. Over 1,000 were killed. The whole city just crumbled. The only building that remained was his. The government needed to set themselves up. They needed to put the offices somewhere. They bought his building for an absolute fortune. He became wealthier than he ever imagined. Hashem paid back his debt. Hashem paid
Kol Halashon.
Back his debt. And Jacob got 10 times more than he had sacrificed for Hashem. But there's another story of somebody else called Israel. And we all know the story. Israel had a shop, and he would always close the shop on Arab Shabbos at Chatzot, exactly before Shabbos. And one time he came, he wanted to buy a large amount of merchandise, and Israel saw he was hitting. Chatzot said, look, I have to close the shop at Chatzot. Another guy said, I'm also a Yid, and I know the halacha, and he got plenty of time for Shabbos. I closed my shop at Chatzot. And that case, you can forget the deal, and Israel says, no problem. He left the deal, all the merchandise stays in the shop, the guy walks out, he locks up. But he didn't come to Hashem and ask for his money back. Israel didn't ask for his money back. Since he didn't ask for his money back, he didn't get it back. He didn't say to Hashem, I lost money because of you, I know you're going to pay me back. He didn't make a cheshbon with Hashem. Since he didn't make a cheshbon with Hashem, he did not get his money back. But instead he got a son the next year who he called Moshe. And that Moshe is Moshe Israel, the Heilige Ramah. Jacob got his money, which lasted for however long it lasted. After a few generations, it's gone. Israel got B'lim Etzar Nachla, as B'li Dai. Israel today in Shemayim, every time he learned Mishnah Berura, he is reaping the rewards, and it's Netzach. It's Olam Habon and Netzach Netzachim, his father, the Heilige Ramah, every time he learned Mishnah Berura. Hundreds of years after Israel has died, he's still getting his dividend. Don't make Cheshbon for Hashem. You can ask him for your money back, he'll give it back. But Chaval, because our little hands, our Mutsogim, give you back, okay, 10 times more money, fine, take it. Because that's what you asked for. You limited yourself. If you'd have remained unlimited, left it to Hashem, you'd have got like fortune, a whole different mustard. If you leave it to Hashem to pay it himself, or if he wants to pay it. Gemara tells us that Avraham Avinu went to war against the four kings. How did he fight them? Says the Gemara, he threw straw and sand at them. And miraculously, the straw and sand turned into swords and spears, and through that, he vanquished his enemies. And the Gemara Durs the Pasuk says something like this. The swords were like straw, and their spears were like dust. And so Avraham Avinu went against the four mighty empires, and he threw sand and straw them, and it turned into swords and spears, and that's how he won the war. The Chasam Sofer asked two questions on this famous Gemara. Two questions. And he said a phenomenal mahalach in this Gemara. I mean, he that's some argues with the Gemara. He said, here they do, but he chose a different mahalach. And I've got two questions. Number one, a person is mechuyev to do hishtablis. We have got chiyev hishtablis. And chiyev hishtablis tells me that when you go and fight an enemy, you throw spears at your enemy, not straw. Throwing straw at your enemy is not called hishtablis. You're not mekayim chuyev hishtablis by throwing straw at your enemy. Question number two asked the Chasam Sofer. Says the Chasam Sofer, the Pasuk doesn't say that the straw turns into spear. It says the other way around. The swords became straw and the spears became sand. It doesn't say the sand became spears and the straw became swords. It says it the other way around. Therefore, Chazal says the Chasam says, I want to tell you pshat in what happened. Avraham Avinu fought his enemies with swords and spears because that's how you fight an enemy. But he understood that not for 1 second did he think that his sword and spear could vanquish his enemy. He said, I know that only the Eibishter can vanquish my enemy. And my shtadlus vis-a-vis its success is meaningless. It's as if I'm throwing swords and spears. It's as if I'm throwing dust and straw at my enemies. It's ki'ilu I'm throwing at my enemies dust and straw. That's what he understood. He did it, the shtadlus, but he never saw in his shtadlus the tetzah. And as a result, he wins the war. Because now his swords and spears are limitless. They can win four mighty armies because he never saw within them his salvation. Has he understood, I'm going with swords and spears and therefore I will win the war because I'm using technology or I'm using a whole system of warfare, he would have lost. Because he wasn't stronger than them. But because he did his ishtadlis, but he saw his bitachon straight in Hashem and not through his ishtadlis, so therefore it's Hashem who is manah of the war. Therefore, it's as if his sword turned into spears. His spear did miraculous things, and that's why he wins the war. It was a smim mitzvah hateva, midarach hateva, because his machshava was a smim midarach hateva, was beyond derach hateva. There was once a Rosh Kredel who came to Rav Shteyman. He was Erev Rosh Hashanah, a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah. He said, Rebbe, I need to collect for my Kredel. I've got a massive Kredel. I'm deeply in debt. I haven't paid my Avreichim. I'm going connecting to America. Can you please give me a bracha? And Rav Shteyman said, now you're going to America now? Says Rav Shteyman, now Yom HaNeiroi, my first made sure it's a time to work on Shuva. And Rosh Kredel said, I know that, but do I have a choice? I owe my Avreichim money. So Shana says, fine, no problem. Go to America, but for 1 day. What? Only 1 day to collect? Okay, 2 days. Only two days. That's locha. The Rosh Kredel left. After Yom Kippur, he came back to Shteyman. He said, Rebbe, I'm going to America collecting money. I desperately need a bracha. I'm so in debt. Shana said, 1 minute. Didn't you go collecting during that Thursday to make sure? He said, I did, but I didn't make anywhere near enough money. How long did you collect for? 2.5 days. How long did I tell you to collect for? 2 days. So what do you want from me? Rabbi, I did l'shem shomayim because my avreichim need money. I can't help you. Rabbi, this time I'll do whatever you say. Fine. Go for 1 hour. The guy may be thinking, 1 hour? Yeah, 1 hour. But Rabbi, 1 hour. Well, Rosh Kredel decided this time I'll do what Shteyman up there. He said, but Rabbi, the whole journey takes more than the journey takes as long as it takes. But 1 hour connecting. The Rosh Kredel flew to America. He flew on Wednesday, let's say. He's coming back on Thursday. Wednesday, he can go collecting, but only 1 hour. So he's in no rush. He wakes up, he does the shachris. After shachris, he sits and learns, and then he goes to the drive and says, okay, drive. Where? I don't know. What do you mean? I've only got 1 hour. You 1 hour? Are you crazy with all the traffic just to get into that? I don't know. Just drive. You can't do anything. I didn't ask you answers, okay? I've got 1 hour. They start driving. After Flutkos has now been stuck in traffic, he realizes he's going to get stopped by this house. A big, big, big Osha. So the guy says, you went there 2 weeks ago. He said, I know, I'm going again. He knocks on the door. The Osha opens the door and says, didn't I see you 2 weeks ago? I gave you a nice donation. He said, you did. I didn't come for a donation. I came to sell you something. The Osha says, what? Can I come inside? Yeah. He shows him a beautiful asterisk. I want to sell you the asterisk. The Osha looks at the asterisk. It indeed was a beautiful asterisk. He says, how much do you want for it? The $250,000. I said, are you crazy? He said, that's my price. I said, I really don't like it. I don't like this system of taking advantage of people. I'm not impressed. And he was so upset that on the spot he phoned his Rob. And he said, Rob, how do you explain this? A Rosh Kredel came to me 2 weeks ago. I gave him a nice donation. He wants to sell me an asterisk. He's asking me $250,000. How do you explain this? And the Rob said, look, it sounds very strange, but Rosh Kredel are not illogical people. Obviously, he's really desperate. And obviously, he really needs the money. And Nebuch, do you know what it means that Avreich could go into Yom Tov with no money to buy basics? This guy was obviously very, very wealthy. So look, here's the opportunity to save a Kredel. To give younger light a Yom Tov, I think you should do it. The Rosh Kredel came back to America with $250,000. He couldn't have dreamt to do that in 5 months worth of collecting money. Now, obviously, we have to do our shtadlus, but what Shteyman was showing you is, if you realize that your shtadlus is limited and your Yeshua comes from Hashem, you can get a Yeshua ugly by. But if you see your shtadlus as your Yeshua, you'll be limited. Go for 1 hour. The first time he told him to go for 2 days. Now, in the 2 days, he didn't collect enough money, which is why he did another half a day. But had he stopped after 2 days and come back to Eretz Yisrael, he would have had enough money. I don't know how, but he would have had enough money. The Harai of Shteyman said to him, how long did you go? 2.5 days, that's why it didn't work. In 2 days, he didn't make the money. He it would have worked. Because if you understand, what Shteyman was showing is what your status is beautiful, but don't see your tzitzah from your status. If you do, you limited yourself. There was also a Maitesh, I think it had to do with Shvadron. I'm not sure though, Shon Shvadron. I'm not sure they had to do with him. But there was a kid who suffered a terrible bronchiolitis. And he was really, really suffering and he was really uncurable. And his father took him to the Chazon Ish. And he said to the Chazon Ish, my son is suffering terribly, a terrible bronchiolitis. We don't know what to do about it. And the Chazon Ish said, take him to the Yarkon River and walk between the eucalyptus trees. So he took his son to the Yarkon River, and they took a little rowboat, and they rowed into the middle of the river, and they got stuck because they didn't have any idea how to row, and they went around in circles. Eventually, got the boat back. They walked around the eucalyptus trees, and after about a couple of hours of being in the trees, they walk home. And as they're walking home, the son turned to his father and said, "Daddy, you'll never believe it. I'm cured. I can breathe. I've never felt so good in my life. I can breathe. I cannot. Daddy, it's unbelievable. I'm cured." He said to his father, "Daddy, let's tell everybody that anyone who's got bronchiolitis should walk between eucalyptus trees and it will cure them." And the father said, "My son, if you will tell everybody that they walk between eucalyptus trees, it will cure them, then you've got your problem back." He said, "Daddy, what do you mean?" Father said, "Look, eucalyptus trees are very nice. They give a bit of fresh air, which is probably healthy for bronchiolitis. But what do you think they can ultimately do? Do you really think they can cure you?" "Okay, so you breathe in the fresh air, they clear out your lungs, and 2 days later you're back to where you started. But if you understand that the Chazon Ish gave you your salvation, it was a bracha of the Chazon Ish, you just hid it in a certain musig of Tera, but it was a Chazon Ish, then you're cured. Then your problem doesn't come back, because when the Chazon Ish gives you a Yeshua, it's real. If you understand that you can act the trees, then you're tied to your understanding, then if you can act the trees to help you, then you are limited. But if you understand it's a Chazon Ish and you just hid it within the Teva, then you won't have a problem again." And that is how Ishtabas works. We have to do the Ishtabas. Hashem tells us to walk between eucalyptus trees. Hashem tells us to do the Maise Ishtabas. But if we see the Ishtabas as our salvation, we're limited to that Ishtabas. Whereas if we're above that and we see it's Hashem, he gave us the bracha and he just hid it within eucalyptus trees, the Ishtabas, then the bracha is limitless. Reb Chaim Kanievsky loved to tell over the following story. It was a story that Chaim Kanievsky enjoyed telling over. He felt there was a tremendous oimik in this story. He heard the story from a Yitzhak Elchanan Spector, who heard the story from a doctor himself. But there was a doctor who was a very, very, very professional doctor, and therefore he becomes the king's physician. And he would go to the king's palace every day and check out the royal family because he was a real expert doctor. And one day, he is walking to the king's palace, and he takes a different route than he normally takes through the poorer section of town, and there's a little tumble-down hut there. And there's a woman, and she's standing there, and she's crying, and Almana, like, wringing her hands, and she sees the doctor, "Doctor, have a heart, just come into my house for 1 minute." So he comes into her house, because he has a heart, and he sees the son lying there, and she says, "Doctor, what can I do for my son? He's lying here, and he's so unwell." So the doctor comes, and he checks her son, and he really, really sees the situation is very, 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 very serious. Very, very, very serious. But he hasn't got the heart to tell the mother the situation, so he wrote her a prescription. He knew it would help. It was things that would boost his system and really, really would help. But he wasn't really enough to save the situation, but it would definitely help the child. And he gave a prescription and he said, "Go and buy all these herbs, crush them, put them into water, and every 17 minutes, give your son a spoonful of this water. He will then go off to the doctor's palace and do what he has to do." 2 weeks later, he's walking to the king's palace and he wants to take his unusual route. And he passes the house of this poor almana, and he sees his son walking in the other direction, perfectly healthy and well. And he's like, "Whoa!" He says to the kid, "Aren't you the kid that I checked out 2 weeks ago?" And the kid said, "Yes." He said, "But you look so healthy and well." "Because I don't understand. You gave my mother a prescription. You told her to give it every 17 minutes. She did that. So why are you so surprised?" He said, "Okay, let me speak to your mother." He goes into the hut because he knew the prescription couldn't really save the situation. It would just help him push it off a bit. He walks into the house. And he meets the mother and he says, "Tell me, what did you do?" "So I tell you what I did. I read your prescription. I looked at all these herbs. I knew that I could never in my life afford these herbs. I knew I could never afford them. It's out of my bracket, my financial bracket. But I knew my son's life is dependent on these herbs. I've got to cross them into the water. There's no way I could even raise the money. And I'm standing there, I'm crying my eyes out that he is the answer to my son's situation, but I can't afford this. What am I going to do?" And at that point, as I'm standing, I said, "One minute. Who cures people? The Eibishter. Only the Eibishter. Medication is Ishtabas, so we have to do. So that's how Hashem tells us to do it via the Ishtabas. But it's the Eibishter. And therefore I can only do my maximum Ishtabas, and my maximum Ishtabas doesn't allow me to buy this medication because I haven't got the money. So it's not in my Chayvus Ishtabas, so I'll do what I can." She said, instead of buying all the herbs on the prescription and grinding them and putting them into water and giving them to my son every 17 minutes, I ground the prescription with all the herbs written on it, and I put it into water, and I fed it to my son every 17 minutes. And you see how well it works. The Yitzchak Chaim Spector says, yeah, of course it works. because she understood that her status is limited, but it's not what brings her salvation. She went directly to Hashem. And since she went directly to Hashem, therefore Yeshua comes directly from Hashem. And once it comes directly from Hashem, it breaks all barriers. Avraham Avinu went to war. According to Chasam Sofer, he went with spears and swords because that's how you fight a war. But in his mind, it wasn't the spears and swords. He understood it as if I'm throwing straw. It's a joke. I'm walking with you can ask the truth. It's a joke. That's not what brings my salvation. And by doing so, he will be there to his incredible salvation. Because he knew it comes from Hashem. He knew it's addressed. And therefore, says Yaakov Avinu, don't say the irony of Ezri. Because once you give Hashem ideas, your channels, how to bring your bracha, then you're limited to those channels. Whereas if you're, although you're supposed to do Ishtadus, but if you don't connect your mind to Ishtadus, then you're unlimited. That's why the God has got no way to find the Shadach can ask for everything. Because she's going directly to Hashem. Therefore, she can say, well, that's Shetah Trini, that's the Hubim. When we go to Hashem and say, Hashem, please pay me back for this material sacrifice, he will pay us back the price that we ask. But it's a chaval. If we don't ask for the price, he'll pay us back with Hashem's system of pay. And that, of course, is so much greater than ours. That's all we have time for today. Chazak, chazak, mitzvah chazak.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.